So this appears to be a take three.
Okay.
It's another take. Mark and Simon spoil everything. Although I feel as though it's been spoiled already.
Okay.
Thor, Love and Thunder, which is the last time we checked, the UK box office number one.
Yeah.
Also number one in America. But we know that you...
That's fine. No,
I'm
going to be very well behaved. I did ask you, it's funny because earlier on in the program, you said when I said something, you said that sounds unpleasant. And you said you did sound angry. I want to be
clear.
You did
sound angry,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry if that's... I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
You've let yourself down.
Let everybody else down.
Tom Bolton, the first credit scene was the best part of the film because I love Brett Goldstein. So there you go. So if Brett's a listener, so he's going to enjoy this bit. Also, it didn't make a whole lot of sense why Korg says he had two dads when the most iconic line of the previous film was about his mum being the only one to show up to his revolution. The Boy That's Blue says, I really liked the way the ending played out. I didn't expect Jane to die or Gore to actually win in a way. Plus, it sets up an interesting dynamic for the next movie to tackle. Having given
does Gore actually win?
Given an oath to protect the kid of the man who killed someone you love is... tricky to write. Anyway, just on the subject of Gore the God Butcher, it is unfortunate that Christian bailed because he was going to be on the show. Yeah. But
he bailed with everything, so obviously something happened
No, absolutely. So he was probably unwell or something like that. So he pulled out all the promo. Because if I was him, I would be, if a character is pitched to you, Gore the God Butcher, I would just think, yes, I'm definitely going to take that because that sounds fantastic. My sole purpose is to go around
the butcher gods.
Finding gods and killing them. So so we know you don't like it. Christian Bale as Gore the God Butcher, what did you think of that? And the whole kind of origin story and deciding to go around killing the deities. Did you like him?
No, I thought it was just silly. I thought the look was just... nothing new or interesting. And I thought, I read a couple of interviews with Christian Bale in which he talked about the character of Gore the God Butcher, and I didn't think Gore the God Butcher had a character. I mean, it's very sort of unearned grief that the movie offers you as the sort of reason for his... I mean, yeah, I thought it was inconsequential and silly, and I never thought it was anything other than Christian Bale doing an impression of the nun from The Nunjuring.
What did you like in the film?
Almost nothing, really. Whilst I was watching it, I lost patience. The point at which it was evident that I was out of sync with the audience was when people were laughing at the Russell Crowe's use stuff.
I thought it was funny. I thought he knew he was ridiculous and stupid. But
he knew he was ridiculous and stupid, and therefore he was doing a comedic turn. You know, with all the grace that you would expect from Russell Crowe doing comedy. It's like that thing in Beggars of Life, isn't it? You know, hear Wallace Beery sing. Well, honestly, I think I'd probably live without that. I thought that scene was the point at which, you know, there's the phrase, you know, jump the shark, which comes from Happy Days, because it's the scene when Fonzie actually jumps the shark. And it's the point at which something tips over into the, okay, I've had enough of this now. And I felt that the shark was spectacularly jumped in that sequence because I didn't think it was anything like, as I could almost imagine everyone on set congratulating themselves on how funny it was that Russell Crowe did the little mince down the steps while holding his skirt and then being funny about the fact that he's Russell Crowe. Interestingly, as I said, I met Brett Goldstein. You know what Brett Goldstein told me about Hercules?
Surprise me.
Nothing. Because he said, with Marvel, they literally put a chip in your neck and they tell you, say nothing. And so he said, about Hercules? He said, nothing. He wasn't even sure whether people were allowed to know that he was Hercules. I said, Brett, you're literally on a big screen. It's in the film. It's absolutely everywhere. But yeah, I didn't.
Did he take you to task?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He said, because it was one of the MK3D shows and I had a bunch of people up and I'd made quite a lot of references to the fact of how much I disliked Thor, Love and Thunder. I did a straw count in the audience. I said, okay, how many people have seen Love and Thunder? Quite a lot. I said, how many people really liked it? And about 8 or 9 people put their hands up. I said, how many people really hated it? And about 8 or 9 people put their hands up. And I said, and how many people thought it was, most of the people put their hands up. So I think the honest truth of it is that a lot of people think it's, I had a, my good friend Ali sent me a text.
From your band?
From my band. Ali is the, you know, the guitarist and mandolin player and manager and general all-round fixer, who sent me angry texts from his children taking me to task for the, 'cause they'd all been to see Thor Love and Thunder and they really enjoyed it. And the way I found out about this was I got literally a text that came from Ali, but I didn't realize it was actually from one of Ali's, just said, you're wrong. So, but I know that many people, but I think that it is generally the case that most people think it's all right. It's nothing to get annoyed about. I did find it something to get annoyed about, and I did actually start to get very, very, I lost patience with it.
We spotted that.
No, I know, but I'm trying, this is me trying to be reasonable.
That's right.
It's quite tiring, isn't it?
There's an email from it. Aurora says, I'd like to say something about Thor Love and Thunder. I completely understand why Mark got so angry last week because I felt exactly the same when Thor Ragnarok came out.
Okay.
I complained to my friend several times that she thought I hated Taika Waititi and his work, but I did like his work a lot.
Yes.
What We Do in the Shadows was my favourite vampire movie. The thing is, just because I liked Waititi so much, I knew he could discuss true feelings and discuss serious topics like love and loss in his work while not taking things too seriously. That's why I felt so bad after watching Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And Thor Love and Thunder. Thor is a fun character with so many great source materials from the comics. Kenneth Branagh did such a wonderful job in the first Thor by giving the franchise a solid beginning and by choosing Hemsworth and Hiddleston for Thor and Loki. The stories of Ragnarok and Gore the God Butcher were epic. Taika could have kept most of the storylines and still have enough time to have some fun. Instead, he put in so many unnecessary jokes in the movie that he turned Thor into a clown. For what? So we can laugh at his loss? Yet most of the jokes in Thor 4 were not even funny. Why did Taika have to show women fainting at the appearance of Hemsworth's naked body? What's the logic behind that? Were we supposed to be amused? Why? Well, I guess up to this point, trying to discuss the logic of any Marvel movie is rather pointless. Back in 2014, I met my first friend in the UK because of Thor. We met in the building where we both lived as overseas students, both wearing Thor t-shirts. He is gay, and I'm a straight girl from a country where gay marriage is illegal. We talked about Thor, this handsome and heroic demigod, while cooking together and have been friends ever since. So Thor remains my favourite superhero, even though I haven't been that into the MCU since Infinity War. The point I'm trying to make here is Waititi didn't need to deconstruct everything in his hands by turning them into jokes. So there is a very fine balance, isn't there? Because she's saying that there is some serious stuff in here, but we've kind of lost that because of the jokes.
Yes, and I think actually that email much more graciously and even handedly than me says exactly what it is that I have a problem with. It is, this is just a joke now, is it? And I feel like a lot of people, a bit of Marvel exhaustion. They have taken a lot of my life up because, you know, I have watched all the Marvel movies, all the Marvel movies. That's my job and that's fine. And there are many worse things you could do. And, you know, there's no point in complaining. Oh, your job's so hard, you have to watch the Marvel movies. But you invest in things and you follow stories and you follow characters. And when even the makers of the film go, oh, it's just a joke, you kind of feel a little bit like that's bad faith. And I think actually, you know, you once said that if I dislike a movie, it's just disappointing. And it takes another thing. It takes with the secondary infection analogy was the one you used to make me angry. I think the secondary infection here is bad faith. I think it is in bad faith to take the story and turn it into a joke. Because if I can make a comparison that seems completely, it'll explain itself. There is a film called Snuff, and it came out in America in the late 1970s. And it was made there had been a whole bunch of news stories about alleged snuff movies, films in which people were actually killed. And this was a kind of mythical thing that people had talked about. And so a guy, Shackleton, I think was the producer, he had a film that he had acquired off a shelf that had been made by Michael and Roberta Findlay that was called Slaughter, which was a cheap slasher movie, which is kind of inspired by the Manson murders. And he'd had it sitting on a shelf for a while, and he didn't know what to do with it. And then when Snuff came out, he went, oh, I can capitalize on that. So he took the end reel of the film off, and he staged a, inverted commas, snuff sequence in which somebody who's meant to be one of the performers in the film is actually killed on film. Now, it's done rather haphazardly and cack-handedly, and it's not real. But the film was marketed in America. There is a point to this, as filmed in South America where life is cheap. And the film was put out in sort of grindhouse cinemas with, I think, without credits, under the impression that what you were watching was a snuff movie. It was like a slasher movie that at the end of it actually had a snuff sequence. Very quickly, Robert Morgenthau, who was the DA in Manhattan, responded to audience shock, and he called the filmmakers to count, and they had to produce the actor, actress who was allegedly killed in the movie, and they had to confess to the fact that the whole thing was a bondoogle. It was a setup. And the producer said, this is outrageous, you're destroying my business, you know, because I'm selling the movie on the basis that it's a real thing. Now, the whole thing became a bit of a scandal. In fact, there was a play called Masterpieces, in which the final scene of Snuff is described in great detail. And I think plays by, anyway, whatever. But it's a feminist play about somebody who sees that film and then what happens to them. And one of the last line of the play, one of the last lines is a description of that sequence, and it says, I have seen a woman killed, and it is real. It isn't real. It isn't real. It's absolutely a setup, okay? And there was a lot of discussion about, here's the point. Kim Newman wrote, I think, the most sensible thing that has ever been said about Snuff, and the whole thing about, you know, they marketed this movie on the basis that it was a snuff movie, blah, 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 blah. Kim said, the worst thing about that film is, it's offensive to the three people in the audience who actually cared what happened at the end of Slaughter. So, because somewhere in the audience, there were three people who watched that rubbish film up until that point and wanted to know what happened to the characters. And then this stupid, grotesque, obscene, dumb, media-led thing went, put that on. And Kim was right. The most offensive thing about that, beyond everything else that was so spectacularly stupid about it, was it was like it was turning to the three people in the audience that actually came to the film and went, well, and you don't even count.
And it's Thor, Love and Thunder
that we're talking about. But the comparison is, Thor, Love and Thunder seems to me to have the same attitude towards its audience, which is, I don't care. And that's what I mean when I say it's an act of bad cinematic faith. It's like leading. That's why I said, I know this seems like a weird comparison, and I'm not for what, you know, but it's the same thing about the contempt for the audience. I don't care what you think, because even I think it's a joke.
I have to say, just back on that DA guy.
DA Robert Morgenthau.
Yeah, calling in the producer. If I'm with the DA.
No, of course.
If you're.
Everyone's with the DA.
I was just thinking, hang on, you're trying to sell a movie.
Yeah.
Making people think that people actually die.
Yes, exactly.
I don't want you to ever make a film ever again.
No, precisely the point. The whole point is, yes, it was an outrageous and offensive and stupid thing. It was, all of those things. But, you know, as Kim also said, and it was also really offensive to the three people who cared what happened in the end of the actual film.
So, because in all of that, in Thor, we do have a character with cancer. And who is dying?
Yes.
So, I wonder if that was also part of the secondary infection that we're talking about, because actually, that could have been a very interesting line to follow. But maybe that was part of the "we don't care anymore," or you know, because you can't have it both ways.
I thought, yeah. I mean, my own feeling about that was, I felt that subplot, it was deeply unearned. It was unearned sentimentality that it had. It didn't know what it was doing with
it.
What
about the Asgardian kids, the team kids in a cage, as Thor calls them? I thought it reminded me of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. You know, when,
yeah, exactly. You know, and they sing Hushabye Mountain.
Yeah, where they all escape. It was one of those.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was.
And the pop music was fun? No.
Well, no, not as fun as the use of pop music in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. which is smart. And that open sequence with Chris Pratt doing his thing. I can't believe that I went off in a long loop about snuff, but you understand why.
I understand the point that you're making. Okay. Anyway, and Zeus is alive. Zeus is alive.
I know. And then, since we're doing the spoilery thing.
Yes.
Natalie Portman turns up in Valhalla. So she might as well be alive, because in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, being in Valhalla is pretty much the same as being alive.
Jess Ross on this says, do you think Jane will see Loki in Valhalla when she gets there in the end? I'd love your thoughts. I know she did. Where do I get giant screaming goats?
Well, memes, that was just the... When even I think a meme is old hat, that really is old hat.
Yeah. Anyway, so Thor Love and Thunder, well and truly spoiled.